The Gateway of India. You are going to listen to a story extract about Dwight Hunsinger's business trip to Mumbai, India. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then, you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 to 4. Put a cross in the correct box. The first one, 0, has been done for you.
The Gateway of India. On these stifling days in Mumbai, when a meeting dragged on, Dwight hitched himself in his chair and looked at the spot where his life had changed. From the height of the boardroom on the top floor of Gigi Boy Towers, where Mahatma Gandhi crossed Church Gate, he could see down the long table and out the window to marvel at it and to reflect on how far he'd come. He loved the Gateway of India for its three portals, open to the sea on one side, land on the other. He regarded it as something personal, a monumental souvenir, an imperial archway attracting a crowd. The ice cream sellers, the nut vendors, the balloon hawkers, the beggars, and the girls looking for men. 8 Indians sat at the gleaming conference table, 4 on either side, and he, Dwight Hunsinger, visiting American, lawyer and money man, was at the head of it. "You are a necessary devil," M.V. Desai, the industrialist, had joked. Objecting to the preening boldness of the man, Dwight smiled, saying, "You bet your sweet ass I am." The man was worth millions. Everyone at the table winced, but Dwight's remark was calculated. They would never forget it. An assortment of roof tiles were scattered on the table, samples to be manufactured somewhere in Maharashtra. Also a bottle of water and a glass with a paper cap at each place, a yellow pad, pencils, dishes of, what, some sort of food, hard salty peas, yellow potato lumps, spicy garbanzos, something that looked like wood shavings, something else like twigs, bundles of cheese straws. "It's all nuts and cheese balls at this table," Dwight had said the first day. Another way of responding to M.V. Desai, another calculation. They had stared at him as though they'd just heard bad news. None of the food looked edible. Although it was his second trip to India, he had not so far touched any Indian food. He did not think of it as food. All of it looked lethal. "Get me out of here," had been his constant thought. India had been an ordeal for him, but he had chosen it in a willful way, knowing it was reckless. It was deliberate. Recently divorced, he had said to his ex-wife in their last phone call, "Maureen, listen carefully. I'm going to India," as if he were jumping off a bridge. It was the day he received her engagement ring back. No note, just a diamond ring, sent by FedEx to his office. And he was hoping she'd feel bad. But, as though to spite him, she said, "It'll probably change your life." And he thought, "Bitch." That was the first trip, a week of Indian hell, a secular, hallucinatory underworld of actual grinning demons and foul, unbreathable air. He had dreaded it, and it had exceeded even his fearful expectations. Dirtier, smellier, more chaotic and unforgiving than anywhere he'd ever been. Hideous did not describe it. There were no words for it. It was like an experience of grief, leaving you mute and small. The worst of it was that the Indians never ceased to praise it, gloating over it, saying how much they loved it. But it was a horror, and here was his discovery. The horror didn't stop. It went on repeating. He turned a corner and went down a new street, and his senses were assaulted again, the sidewalks like freak shows.
"You seem a good deal disappointed," Mr. Shaw said.
Shaw, the point man, was his guide in everything.
"Not disappointed," Dwight said. "I'm disgusted. I'm frightened. I'm appalled. Don't you see I want to go home?"
In this world of anguish, he felt physically hurt by what he saw. But it continued for the days he was there and did not stop until he had gotten back on the plane and left the smell of failure, of futility, of death and disease, returning to Boston with another discovery. In all that misery, there was money. Extreme measures. He brought a supply of tuna fish, the small cans with pop-off lids, and crackers and Gatorade. It was like a prison diet, but it would be bearable and appropriate for his 7 days of captivity in Mumbai. These he would spend in the best room at the best hotel, the Elephanta Suite at the Taj Mahal Hotel, just across the gateway. Yet he was ashamed of himself, standing in his hotel bathroom of polished marble and gilt fittings, leaning over the sink, eating tuna fish out of a can with a plastic fork. 3 days of that, 3 days of Shaw's saying,
"You must see Crawford Market and Chor Bazaar, perhaps Elephanta Caves, perhaps side trip to Agra to see Taj. What you want to see?"
"The Gateway of India."
"Very nice. Three portal arches. Tripulia of Gujarati design. Not old. Put up by British in 1927, but..."
Shaw widened his mouth, grinning in confusion.
"What?"
"You can see it from here."
"That's what I like about it."
India was a foreign country where he'd been assigned to find outsourcing deals. Not a place to enjoy, but one to endure, like going down a dark hole to find jewels. He worked in the boardroom, wrangling with manufacturers. He sat in his suite and watched CNN. His grimmest pleasure was looking through the classifieds of the Hindustan Times, the pages headed Matrimonials. And he smiled in disbelief at the willingness in the details, the eagerness of the girls desperate to be brides, the boys to be grooms. His disillusionment with marriage was compounded by his misery in India. He suffered, and the firm was grateful, for India proved to be outsourcing heaven. The Gateway of India. On these stifling days in Mumbai, when a meeting dragged on, Dwight hitched himself in his chair and looked at the spot where his life had changed. From the height of the boardroom on the top floor of Gigi Boy Towers, where Mahatma Gandhi crossed Church Gate, he could see down the long table and out the window to marvel at it and to reflect on how far he'd come. He loved the Gateway of India for its three portals, open to the sea on one side, land on the other. He regarded it as something personal, a monumental souvenir, an imperial archway attracting a crowd. The ice cream sellers, the nut vendors, the balloon hawkers, the beggars and the girls looking for men. 8 Indians sat at the gleaming conference table, 4 on either side, and he, Dwight Hunsinger, visiting American, lawyer and money man, was at the head of it.
"You are a necessary devil," M.V. Desai, the industrialist, had joked.
Objecting to the preening boldness of the man, Dwight smiled, saying, "You bet your sweet ass I am."
The man was worth millions. Everyone at the table winced, but Dwight's remark was calculated. They would never forget it.
An assortment of roof tiles were scattered on the table, samples to be manufactured somewhere in Maharashtra. Also a bottle of water and a glass with a paper cap at each place, a yellow pad, pencils, dishes of, what, some sort of food, hard, salty peas, yellow potato lumps, spicy garbanzos, something that looked like wood shavings, something else like twigs, bundles of cheese straws.
"It's all nuts and cheese balls at this table," Dwight had said the first day.
Another way of responding to M.V. Desai, another calculation. They had stared at him as though they'd just heard bad news. None of the food looked edible. Although it was his second trip to India, he had not so far touched any Indian food. He did not think of it as food. All of it looked lethal.
"Get me out of here," had been his constant thought.
India had been an ordeal for him, but he had chosen it in a willful way, knowing it was reckless. It was deliberate. Recently divorced, he had said to his ex-wife in their last phone call,
"Maureen, listen carefully. I'm going to India," as if he were jumping off a bridge.
It was the day he received her engagement ring back. No note, just a diamond ring, sent by FedEx to his office. And he was hoping she'd feel bad.
But as though to spite him, she said, "It'll probably change your life." And he thought, "Bitch." That was the first trip, a week of Indian hell, a secular, hallucinatory underworld of actual grinning demons and foul, unbreathable air. He had dreaded it, and it had exceeded even his fearful expectations, dirtier, smellier, more chaotic and unforgiving than anywhere he'd ever been. Hideous did not describe it. There were no words for it. It was like an experience of grief, leaving you mute and small. The worst of it was that the Indians never ceased to praise it, gloating over it, saying how much they loved it. But it was a horror, and here was his discovery. The horror didn't stop. It went on repeating. He turned a corner and went down a new street, and his senses were assaulted again. The sidewalks like freak shows.
"You seem a good deal disappointed," Mr. Shaw said.
Shaw, the point man, was his guide in everything.
"Not disappointed," Dwight said. "I'm disgusted. I'm frightened. I'm appalled. Don't you see I want to go home?"
In this world of anguish, he felt physically hurt by what he saw. But it continued for the days he was there and did not stop until he had gotten back on the plane and left the smell of failure, of futility, of death and disease, returning to Boston with another discovery. In all that misery, there was money. Extreme measures. He brought a supply of tuna fish, the small cans with pop-off lids, and crackers and Gatorade. It was like a prison diet, but it would be bearable and appropriate for his 7 days of captivity in Mumbai. These he would spend in the best room at the best hotel, the Elephanta Suite at the Taj Mahal Hotel, just across the gateway. Yet he was ashamed of himself, standing in his hotel bathroom of polished marble and gilt fittings, leaning over the sink, eating tuna fish out of a can with a plastic fork. 3 days of that, 3 days of Shah's saying,
"You must see Crawford Market and Chor Bazaar, perhaps Elephanta Caves, perhaps side trip to Agra to see Taj. What you want to see?
The Gateway of India.
Very nice. Three portal arches. Tripulia of Gujarati design. Not old. Put up by British in 1927, but...
Shaw widened his mouth, grinning in confusion.
What?
You can see it from here.
That's what I like about it.
India was a foreign country where he'd been assigned to find outsourcing deals. Not a place to enjoy, but one to endure, like going down a dark hole to find jewels.
He worked in the boardroom, wrangling with manufacturers. He sat in his suite and watched CNN. His grimmest pleasure was looking through the classifieds of the Hindustan Times, the pages headed Matrimonials. And he smiled in disbelief at the willingness in the details, the eagerness of the girls desperate to be brides, the boys to be grooms. His disillusionment with marriage was compounded by his misery in India. He suffered, and the firm was grateful, for India proved to be outsourcing heaven.